Today FM's Dermot and Dave.
Now, a lot of people would know it as the Angelina Jolie gene or the Michelle Heaton gene. And a ticking time bomb is how our next guest described finding out that she was living with a gene mutation that increases the likelihood of cancer. Rachel McKeown then made a massive decision to have a double mastectomy and have her ovaries removed, which of course would change the course of her health journey. She's on the line now to talk about it. Good morning, Rachel.
Morning. Hi, how are you?
We're very well, thanks. It's Dermot here and Dave's here as well. And thanks for sharing your story, because I think a lot of people will have a lot of interest in it today. What year or how long ago was it when you realised that you actually had this gene?
Would have been 2 years ago that I would have got diagnosed. Would I tell you a bit of the story, just kind of how it led up to that?
Please, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of the kind of co-founders of a charity called Overcare, and we kind of support ovarian cancer patients and their families for the last 10 years. And then my reason for co-founding that was that my mum had passed away from ovarian cancer 21 years ago. So it was through the charity that I then heard about the BRCA mutations. I hadn't really heard about it. So, and like you said, until Angelina Jolie and Michelle Heaton stories. So even though my mum had ovarian cancer and my aunt would have had breast cancer, I still kind of didn't know about the BRCA mutations until I was kind of working with other patients, really. And then I always said, look, I'd never get tested unless I was going to take action, because I knew I'd struggle to live with the knowledge of I had the gene. So, and also I hadn't finished having my family at that point, so I didn't want my ovaries removed. And then kind of two things changed for me. One was I had a pain in the left side of my chest. And the second thing was my cousin then in her 40s got breast cancer. So now I've brought it into my generation. Mm. So I went to have a mammogram for the pain in the chest. And then the consultant that I went to, it was him that actually said, with your family history, you kind of have a 50-50 chance of having that BRCA gene. And I was really shocked that it was that high. So I spoke to my cousin, and my aunt had the foresight to leave some a thing of blood behind, would you believe, so that we could test it if we ever wanted to. And they'd already done that because they were part of a genetic screening program. So she had the BRCA1 gene. So did my cousin. So now I was kind of like, well, I kind of think I need to get tested here. So I already had a three-year-old, so I thought, okay, it could mean I have no more children, but look, I need to be around for her. So that's kind of what changed it for me. Mm. And then got tested and obviously found out that I had the BRCA gene at that point.
And so how did you feel when you realized that you had it, that this was no longer some speculation in the back of your mind and will I or won't I, or maybe this, maybe that? How did you deal with the news of having this? And then what was the process then of deciding what you were going to do about it, if anything?
Yeah, I think like you said, I definitely felt like a ticking time bomb. So as soon as I had the news, I was like, oh my God, I have to do everything straight away. I think women are quite practical anyway and kind of, you know, go into practical mode first. So but that ticking time bomb feeling. And I remember my sister saying to me, look, you've had the gene since you were born. So, you know, cool your jets there, make your decision, take your time. And I kind of had, I felt like I had a window of maybe 1 to 2 years in terms of my family history and when they all would have got cancer. I thought, okay, I've got 1 to 2 years here to make my decisions, but I knew that I still needed to go at a reasonable pace to take the action. So then the ovaries were first, because you can't detect cancer. It's very, until the symptoms are quite late, you can't see, there's no particular screening you can have. So I knew I needed to do the ovaries and tubes first, which then sends you into kind of menopause overnight, really.
So what age were you when you had that operation, the oophorectomy?
I would have been 47. So, yeah. So even though I knew the chances of me having other children were very low because I was late in my 40s. Just to know that decision's now gone altogether.
Yeah.
Was kind of, that was tough to deal with first. Mm. And then menopause, you know, you hear women talk about menopause, but oh my goodness, surgically induced and overnight. I remember the consultant saying to me, take your time to think about the mastectomy. And I was kind of like, no, let's do it straight away. And they said, no, see how you get on after having your ovaries removed. And they were right, because I kind of felt a little bit mad for a little while until that settled. And then I needed to kind of think about all the surgery options for the mastectomy, because there's a lot of different surgery options.
Did you have a partner at this point in your life? And if so, how did they feel about these decisions and you know, planning the future and planning these events together?
Yeah, my husband, Dave, he's very practical about these things as well. But it did hit both of us quite hard. Probably not me as hard at first because I went into practical mode. He was probably, you know, in a better space to kind of weigh it all up. But like that, we kind of, you know, it was, we'd like you around for longer. And so it was, in some ways, an easy decision as far as that was concerned. Because once you have family members that are taken out with that, you kind of, that does make your decision become a bit clearer, if you know what I mean.
Mm, yeah.
I think in terms of preparation, but you can ask me a question, sorry.
Well, we have lots of questions to ask. We definitely want to. I want to go back to something you said about the. Listen, the more talking you do, the better, definitely, Rachel. One of the questions I wanted to ask you about was the medically induced menopause. And you said that that obviously hit you a little bit harder than maybe you had anticipated. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was. I can only describe it as like a fog descending. It was very hazy. Lots of crying for no reason. And it was, I kind of found it very debilitating, you know, trying to work at the same time. And so normally, well, obviously, when you go through the menopause, your hormones gradually decline. And you know, you have your good days, bad days, but surgically induced, it's literally overnight.
Yeah.
So you can go on to HRT straight away. And there's no medical reason you can't. I just preferred not to until I'd done the mastectomy because I personally felt like I didn't want to put any hormones into my body until I'd done that piece. But you can, you are able to do that. You don't have to suffer through menopause. Yeah. You can actually go on to the HRT.
Okay, so then the decision then to get the double mastectomy, what was, how long after the ovarian operation was that?
So I had that in September 18 and then March 19 was when I did the mastectomy. And there's a couple of options you can do for that. So basically, you can either have implants or so implants is, you know, they do look good, the implants, and it's a more straightforward surgery, as in you have the mastectomy straight into reconstruction of implants, which is about 4 to 5 hour surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Or my consultant said you can have the Rolls-Royce version, which is called a Dieppe surgery. So they take fat from somewhere else on your body, usually the tummy, and they replace your breast tissue with the fat instead. And that was the option that I preferred because it's very personal choices. But for me, I just didn't like the idea of a factory-made substance in my body. So I went for the Rolls-Royce version and you kind of get a tummy tuck at the same time, which is a nice bonus of using the fat from there. But that now made that a kind of 10 to 12 hour surgery.
Yeah. So. And psychologically, you know, going in, having those discussions, mulling it over in your mind. I mean, how difficult was that? Because obviously, you know, they've been part of your breasts are part of your body for so long. You have a particular relationship with them. You may have breastfed with them. And, you know, it's essentially very healthy tissue that you're choosing to get rid of. So how was that whole thought process?
Yeah, and some of that actually surprised me because I'm into my sports. So for me, you know, I thought I'm not really a boob person. I kind of just strap them down and get on with my sports. But you're right, they are part of you. You have lived with them all your life. And so I had a good counselor at the time. I made sure to go through counseling throughout the whole process, and that really helped, almost thanking them, if you like, saying goodbye to them. And I kind of prepared for it. Like I kind of, for the surgery, I almost prepared like I was running a marathon, just to get super fit and healthy and ready for it. Oh, don't get me wrong. I did eat a lot of cake as well. And, I tend to comfort eat when I'm upset. And I remember, my husband saying to me, you know, at this rate, you'll have enough fat for boobs on the front and the back. it was just kind of.
As only a husband can.
I know, he knows I have a warped sense of humor, but no, it's just kind of, you just have to, but you have to deal with these things with humor, with, you know, whatever works for you personally and, you know, counseling. And I'm a big fan of the holistic approach. So I was meditating, Pilates, yoga, acupuncture, and obviously Mary Keating Foundation, you know, you get to talk to other women that have been through it. They have like a show and tell where you can, you know, see other women's surgery before and after, so you can kind of see what the after effects look like. So all those things really help you come to terms with it, if you like.
Yeah, we're talking to Rachel Keown here on Today FM with Dermot and Dave, who made a decision to have a double mastectomy and an oophorectomy, which is the removal of the ovaries, to prevent herself getting cancer, because you had the BRCA cancer gene mutation. Have you spoken to many other people since, Rachel, who have found out that they have or have fears that they might have this BRCA gene mutation?
Yeah, and through the Marie Keating, they have a support group, a BRCA support group. So funnily enough, in the ovarian cancer charity that I work with, there's patients there that have BRCA and mutation, but they would have also been through the cancer journey, and that's kind of how they discovered they had the BRCA mutation. So I always kind of felt guilty, if you like, talking to them, because they'd already been so brave and through so much already with their journey, that then thank God for Marie Keating Foundation, because then I also got to talk to other women that were on that journey and at different stages of that journey. So I kind of got to understand pieces of that. And there were some very good books that I used as well. There's a lady called Amy Byers-Shaneman, and she's on Twitter. I think she's called the BRCA Responder. But she, I loved reading her book. She really helped me prepare for it, because she said, what would you do? You know, she kind of said, if there was a terrorist on a plane and you knew that he'd been on other planes and he'd taken out those planes, would you get on the plane? And I kind of, that for me did it. It kind of thought, no, I wouldn't. And also, when you're the terrorist, they're taking out my family members. No, I definitely wanted off board that terrorist as soon as I could. That kind of helped me make my peace with it, if you like, as it was the right decision for me.
How was lockdown for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, so practical throughout everything, that when we went into lockdown, all my surgeries were done then. The trauma of it all hit me, because now we had more time to think. So again, linked back in with my great friends and family support network, Marie Keating network, and went back to all my exercise stuff. And but to be honest, it's the Marie Keating group that have really kept me going and made me feel sane. Because you know what it's like when you have more thinking time, or the bad thoughts creep back in, you know?
Yeah, and obviously you have your own charity work and your own work in the area of cancer. Have your experiences changed your approach, or you know, your attitude to the work you were already doing?
Kind of, and I've always kind of, because my mum would have had ovarian cancer and passed away from that, I kind of always had an appreciation of it. But you're right, it's almost, I think sometimes when you lose a family member, it's like death is kind of stood to the side of you. But I think when you're facing something yourself, it's like it moves in front of you, is my best way of putting it. And so I kind of had an appreciation of that, of now, you know, we all know we're going to die at some point, but it's kind of, if you feel like, oh, okay, now I can actually see it in front of me. So it helped me just understand the patient voice a bit better, I guess. That's probably the best way I can put it, Dermot, really.
Yeah, well put. Yeah. So you've mentioned the Marie Keating Foundation and everything that they did for you. There is an annual, and it's the fourth annual BRCA conference coming up now. It's actually next weekend, I think the 23rd of April. Can you tell us what will happen during that? And if anyone's listening this morning who kind of your story has resonated with them, and maybe they are have concerns or worries about the BRCA gene mutation, can you tell us what will happen at the seminar?
Oh yeah, it's brilliant. So it's all online, and they'll have different speakers in. So they'll have patients, a bit like myself, but patients that will come on and tell their stories. And I know this time they're having a man coming on as well to tell about his story, because obviously the BRCA gene can also affect them. It's genetically passed on. And it can increase your risk of prostate cancer. So there's going to be those patients as well. And then they'll have the different speakers from surgeons to kind of talk about the different things that can happen. But the best place to get all the information is definitely to go to their website, because I'm obviously not explaining it in great detail, but that's exactly what happens. They have different speakers.
And did you have... I'm sorry, did you have all the procedures done in Ireland?
I did. Yes, I did. Funnily enough, my mum was Irish, so all my stuff, that's why I set up an Irish charity when I moved back over here. All done in Ireland, and fantastic surgeons over here, I have to say.
So your experience moving through and going through these such big operations within our health system, which gets knocked a lot of the time, it was a positive experience for you, well, as positive as it could be, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. I can't talk highly enough about them. I have to say the support before and after as well. And while during the hospital stay, fantastic teams. It was actually in Galway hospitals. I can't talk highly enough of them. And the consultants as well. And they all moved at a pace. So, yeah, you know, yeah, definitely. I know it's different during lockdown. I know that's hard for people. But that's why you need your support groups, get your information, make sure you get onto the lists if you need to.
Yeah, actually, there are questions coming in on 087-4100-102. Lots of comments praising you for telling your story, Rachel. But one asks, can you ask Rachel, both my mom and my aunt died from cancer, excuse me. I was refused testing. Can you ask only if it comes into your generation that you can be tested?
No, is the answer to that. You don't need to wait for it to come into your generation. So even as soon as I said to the consultant about my mum and my aunt, he was happy to send me for testing.
Right.
So I think, you know, my route was through my GP, recommended to a consultant in Galway, and then he referred me on to for genetic testing.
Yeah. Okay.
The way you tell your story, Rachel, is just so impressive. And I said for people listening, they find it quite hard to believe how practical, how strong-minded, how brave, how you seem to be just making these really life-changing decisions and just sort of putting the head down and going for it. I think for a lot of people will be thinking, God, if I was faced with something similar, I'm not sure I would have the togetherness or the mental clarity that you seem to have through all of this. Were you always like this, or is it something that seemed to just kick into gear when you were faced with these challenges?
It's definitely kicked into gear since having the challenges, and it's probably also from working with cancer patients for the last 10 years and probably seeing my family go through what they went through as well. I think it's different factors, you know, and I've definitely had my dark days. Don't get me wrong. I definitely have. But more so after than during, but I know some people have them almost before when they're weighing up their surgery options. But I think because I felt I only had a short window of 1 to 2 years to get them done because of my family history, I think that's probably why I went immediately into practical mode. Mm. I think maybe I would have done more thinking and being more upset beforehand if I didn't, whereas instead I dealt with that after, if that makes sense.
As severe and I suppose as thorough as these operations are that you had, do you feel in some way that the black shadow or the black cloud that's been hovering over you has disappeared now?
Yes, is the answer to that. Now, because my percentages now really just come back into the public, same as the public risk, general public risk. So when you're looking into kind of 60 to 80, 90% risk, is that for me was just too high. I do feel like that cloud has lifted. I don't feel like a ticking bomb anymore anyway, to put it that way.
That's the main thing. Rachel McKeown, your own charity is overcare.ie and then mariekeating.ie/events if you want to sign up for that webinar that's going to take place on the 23rd of April, the 4th annual BRCA conference. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and with everyone today. I think it's really going to help a lot of people.
Oh, thanks a million for having me. It's great to raise the awareness. Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel.
Cheers, Rachel. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dermot and Dave. Listen live, on air, from 9 a.m. weekdays on Today FM.